Coming to you by way of the not-for-profit mainframe studios at 900 Kiowa in downtown Des Moines, this is 900 Views, a podcast about building community through the arts as we build an arts community. I'm your host, Pat Bodie, and today I'm at the Fitch in the studio of visual and performance artist Laressa Cable. Cable is a Michigan native who earned her BFA with honors from Iowa State University and shows her work across the country while calling Des Moines home, essentially making a living in the arts from this Des Moines base camp. She's received numerous honors, including the 2017 U.S. Artist Fellowship nominee, 2016 Joan Mitchell Foundation nominee, 2015 Iowa Arts Council Fellowship, and in 2012, the Obamas selected her work to appear on the White House Christmas card. She's got a really fun blog about that on her website, so check that out. Now Laressa is about to launch The Cream, an exciting new approach for connecting the visual arts community, not just in the Des Moines Metro, but across the state. The celebration of this launch takes place here in Laressa's studio at the Fitch as part of Art Week on Tuesday, June 25th, and you're not going to want to miss her studio. It's really quite stunning. You will want to be here and around that night. Lots will be happening in the Western Gateway and its environs as Art Week builds to the Arts Festival climax the following weekend. Before we find out more about Laressa, her thoughts on arts and community, and just what is The Cream, I want to mention that at the end of this interview, we'll have some events to note, as well as a poem to share by one of the Art Week poets appearing at Zanzibar's Coffee Adventure. So, Laressa, I'm going to make folks wait just a bit to hear more about The Cream, because knowing a little bit more about you and your work and your philosophy, if you will, about arts community is going to help set the context for that project. So you've been at this for more than a quarter century by my math, right?
Well, that makes me feel really old. Oh, suddenly I didn't feel old before. I've been able to do art full-time since I moved into the Fitch, and I was trying to think, it's been 15 years
Wow.
that I've been in this building.
So 15 years of actually being able to do this work full-time from the heart of the Midwest.
Yes.
So what did you envision your work would be like compared to where you are and what you're doing now when you graduated, for example, in 1992?
I had zero. When I graduated from Iowa State, I actually had a emphasis in fibers.
And
so, yeah, so I was doing completely different things.
Because you do a lot of drawings and, well, performance and these photographs you have of you with dead animals, we'll have to talk about
that. Yeah. I think, you know, when I was graduating from college, I was very young, and I didn't have a lot of experience, but I had a lot of impulse to make. And I love craft, and I love details, and, you know, what college taught me is give me a big project that's going to be very boring to complete, and I'm on board with it. I love it. You know, I hours and hours and hours spent weaving tapestries and doing embroidery. I loved it. And I found it very meditative. And I found out that I was good at setting my own projects and deadlines and following through with them. So that's what I had coming out of college, but I didn't have a lot of content. So I had some skills, but nothing to say with them. And it just took years of working strange jobs and moving around with my husband and having a lot more life experience before I realized what my own personal motivation is for mm-hmm. making the art.
I'm trying to find a quote in my notes here where you told me, quote, "My work is an extension of my own struggles with difficult questions around sex, death, and power in our culture." What do you feel comfortable about sharing those struggles, and how does your work help with those? You're certainly not the Seinfeld of the art world. This is not about nothing.
No, it's about, like, the biggest questions. And I mean, one of the things that comes up over and over again for me is, how do you live a meaningful life and love freely and be open-hearted knowing that everything is going to be destroyed at the end? You'll lose everything. It's just, that's the process of life.
Yeah.
And that's such a hard thing to love something fully, knowing that, like, that love will end and you will be heartbroken. So those sorts of things, that always comes back to the middle for me. That's like one of the most important questions about being alive, and it's something that keeps coming up over and over again in my work. Power and sex and value, those things are all kind of like constellations that swirl around that. But for me, the central question is, you know, how do you accept your life?
So how do you, and how is the work making a difference? I keep thinking about those pieces I saw on your website where Ben Easter, mm-hmm. who shares this studio with you, is that accurate?
That is.
And did the photography. It's just stunning, but I don't think you'll take offense here when I say it is both repulsive and intriguing mm-hmm. at once. It's your body turns away and your head wants to do a quick whip snap back. You can't stop looking at these photographs of you with dead animals.
Absolutely. Yeah, Ben Easter and I have a collaborative that called the Belmort Collective, where I'll have a weird project I want to do, and Ben's on board with it because he is the best. He's a great photographer, and he's just not afraid to delve into those questions as well. For me, the epitome of that work, it came in from kind of a sideways point. It wasn't something that I just one day said, like, let's go take some pictures with me and some dead animals. I saw some good roadkill. I was in Juxtapose magazine, and they wanted a non-traditional portrait of me for it. And Ben was like, sure, I'll take the picture for you. And he said, what do you want to do? And I'd done a bunch of dead fawn portraits that highly realistic pen and colored pencil drawings that were all about infant mortality. They were all about losing children and using the fawn as a substitute, not showing actual dead children because that's too much for people, but, you know, addressing it in that sideways way,
yes.
where people are a little more easily engaged, because I'd become a mother by that point and had realized that, like, I looked at it just as like this wonderful experience of love and wanting to be Santa Claus and all this wonderful stuff. And the thing that you don't really think about is you've just opened yourself up for the most incredible vulnerability of your life.
I can't deny that.
No, it never goes away. It doesn't matter how old your children are. My son's 20. And the worry and wanting to take care of them, it just never, never stops. So I had done these dead fawn drawings, and I said, well, I think we should do a picture of me with a dead deer. I think that would make sense for me. And he's like, cool. And we drove all over trying to find a dead deer, which, you know, they commit suicide all the time.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately for everyone involved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when you want one, you cannot find one. And so it took a long time. So we finally got our deer and got this picture, and we both loved it. And we're like, there's something there about that. There's a real vulnerability, and it's beautiful, and yet, as you say, repulsive. Like, you know, and when I think about, like, I walk my dogs every day, I see dead things every day.
Yeah.
We're in dead baby bird season. There are dead birds outside of Meredith Publishing all the time where they hit the windows. And I think about, like, how often in your regular life do you see something dead? It could be something you're going to eat. It could be something that got hit. And you don't think about it in those terms, but this is something that's just, you're not separate from it.
What kind of reaction do you get to this kind of work?
Varied, which is the part that makes it particularly powerful and interesting, that makes me want to dig into it even more deeply, because it shows how people have to compartmentalize these really difficult subjects. And so different people's reactions, especially when we've tried to get, I've had people give me dead animals to use for the photos. And then some of them are roadkill or things that I find when I'm out on my walk with my dogs. But when I've actually solicited trying to get a particular animal, like I really wanted to get a lamb and I'm having a hard time getting one, you know, people would be like, I don't know if I feel comfortable with that project. And it's like, I am not Damien Hirst. I'm not asking you to kill an animal for me. Although that happens all the time with, you know, I mean, I go to the grocery store, there's plenty of meat there. But I'm not asking you to kill them for this photo. I just want to borrow your dead animal for about 45 minutes.
Okay.
And you can have it back and do whatever you want to do with it. I just need to borrow it. And some people are real practical about it. Some people are very interested. And some people are so, they don't know where to place that anxiety. And they'll just say, like, I don't know why it bothers me. It just bothers me and I can't do it. And I'm like, well, that is, I mean, that's fine. I'm not trying to force somebody to do something they're not comfortable with, but where that discomfort is, that's an interesting place to sit.
So that begs the question that I've been wanting to ask someone as I launched this podcast back in January, related to building community through the arts, mm-hmm. since we build an arts community. I say that every podcast, so mm-hmm. people are probably sick of hearing that phrase. But in this particular case, we've talked a lot about on this program, which we will again hear, I think, because it's valuable and important, how you make a living, how you function, and the role of the community supporting the arts and the arts supporting community, et cetera. But in your particular case, you're dealing with subject matter that themes, depth, meat, pardon the horrific pun, that is that we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about how the content of the work could or should have an impact on community.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're telling me about how people are reacting, these various reactions you're getting, it seems to me there's some level of, in an maybe an odd, weird way, it's community building.
Oh, for sure.
Tell me more about that.
Well, you know, if you go into a difficult, I mean, to me, like, part of the Dead Fawn drawings was my own exploration of this vulnerability of being a parent.
Right.
Well, how many other people are parents and have that exact same vulnerability? And you can pretend, you know, like, people don't want to talk about it. They get very, it's almost like superstitious. Like, if you talk about it, something bad will happen. But how many parents go in when their little baby is sleeping just to watch them breathe, just to make sure they're still alive? I mean, it's just one of those impulses. And so when I was doing those drawings, they were small enough. They were little portraits that were part of the series. They were small enough I would take them around with me to different places to work on them, and people would ask, what are you working on? And then I would tell them what I was working on. And over and over and over again, I had parents tell me about children that they had lost.
Oh,
and so
geez.
Those fawns are actually, one of them is named after the name of the fawn that had died because it was special to the person that owned it. But the others are all named after children who had died. And so that's the bridge that real content like that, it you know, some people are going to walk away from it, and that's perfectly fine. But it opens up a place of conversation, because the thing that I did not understand about the situation of being a parent who's lost a child, whether they're small, I mean, one of them is named after a baby that died of SIDS, one of them was an adult child that died. The thing is that people are so uncomfortable with death, we're so removed from it, the whole process of it, that we don't know what to do with that anxiety, and we don't know how to be with the people that are in pain. And so these parents, who are the people that most need support, were being ostracized, that nobody wanted to talk about that child anymore. And they said, it's like a second death, because mm-hmm. if you talk about your kid, people don't know how to respond to, like, oh, that's the one that died, and I don't know what to say, and my kid's still alive, you know, all of those things,
right.
Where you feel guilty or anxious about it. And so it's like a second death. And really, you want to be able to remember that person.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah, don't miss me, remember me.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, and that's a really hard thing to be able to do. And so, like, some of the drawings I do are falling horses, and they're not in an environment, they're on a plain white sheet of paper.
And they're breathtakingly beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you. Those are like a meditation for me. And it's really meditating about the fact that we're all falling. You know, you don't remember when you start your life. You have a few beginning memories, but like you're already going by the time you become conscious, right?
Yeah.
And you don't know when it stops. At least very few people do. And so it's this process of, like, you're in free fall. We're all in free fall, with no beginning, no idea of what the end is. How do you live with that? How do you find a balance point with that? And how are you compassionate to others because they're in the same situation?
So the community piece here is really our commonality of being human.
Absolutely.
And when we can reach those kinds of depths, we can maybe find greater happiness, greater kindness and compassion in this world.
Sure.
Through and with each other. Is that kind of what I'm hearing you say?
Oh, absolutely. If you've lost someone really important to you, or you've had a real scare where you thought you weren't going to make it, you look at life completely differently.
Yeah.
Little things do not faze you like they used to. And you've got a lot more room for empathy in your heart for somebody else. And so having those conversations and not backing away from it, I think, is to everybody's benefit. People that have experienced loss, people that haven't yet, and will, because we all will.
But you've spent, so moving to a little bit lighter topic, not that I'm trying to avoid that one, but I don't want to miss talking about the cream and some of the aspects of your life as an artist that are a little bit more logistical.
Sure.
So tell me a little bit about the particular obstacles of a Midwest-based career in the arts and at the same time the opportunities.
Well, it's a fairly small pond,
you a big fish?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what I would call that. There are a lot of people that know my work because it is a smaller pond, and I am in Des Moines, which is the largest city in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And so I've had some really wonderful opportunities, such as like doing the Obama Christmas card.
That's
pure
so
chance,
cool.
Weird thing, but it's because I'm one of the, you know, handful. How many artists are in Des Moines with a regular practice? There's, you know,
yeah.
It's not New York, it's not Chicago, it's not LA.
Yeah.
But there are those wonderful things where you can have real relationships with people that work at the Des Moines Art Center. You can really get to meet anybody that you want to know, other artists that are working in the area. There are so many opportunities in that way, but the thing that I've talked with a lot of my artist friends about that we find challenging is that it's almost like there's a force field around the state.
Hmm.
There is this very strange, I don't know why it is this case exactly, but people don't look at the state of Iowa as a place where art is being produced, serious art is being produced.
Yeah.
And that's not true. There are several artists, you know, Philip Chen got a Guggenheim.
Yeah.
I don't hear anybody talking about that, but he's just up the road. You know,
I
saw him at the art opening on Saturday night. So it's not that people aren't making important, beautiful, thought-provoking art, just nobody thinks about Iowa as that place. And so that's been kind of an interesting challenge, which is why the cream came up as a project.
So let me set you up with your tagline, meeting the artists of the Midwest one studio visit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit then about what the cream is and how it's going to help take down these walls that are around Iowa.
Well, we hope. Always out to do the good work. A very good friend of mine, Stephanie Brunia, who is a fabulous artist and photographer, we were talking about this because I like to go do a lot of studio visits. I really enjoy talking with other artists, seeing their process, the spaces that they work in can be very interesting. I feel like I have more of I'm lucky I have a very traditional sort of like north window, concrete floor, good place to make messy work. But there are so many artists that are doing fabulous things in places that are non-traditional art making spaces. And so that's just, it gets me jazzed. To see how, like, Molly Wood, who's also a photographer here in Des Moines and a friend of mine, she shoots these amazing images on her dining room table with a square of black velvet tied behind everything. So she just, like, it pops up. She does amazing work. Beautiful things happen. And then it all gets torn down, and she just has dinner, you know. And I'm like, that's amazing. If you saw her work on her website and all the opportunities that she's had, you would never think that she does not have a dedicated space.
So the cream is ultimately a website that reflects upon your studio visits.
Absolutely.
And your studio visits have some structure to them, a series of questions that you send ahead, and you get the answers from the artists themselves, plus you do your own spin.
Exactly. Stephanie, we have like a wish list of people that we want to go in and see, because I wanted to kind of formalize. I'm doing the studio visits anyways, and I said, well, I kind of feel like we should share
what you're learning.
What we're learning, and give some exposure to some of the artists. And she's like, can I help with that? I'm like, absolutely. You want to? And she's like, yeah, I'll take the photos and I'll help with the interviews. So we have a list of artists and we'll pick weekends where we'll try to batch two or three of them together because of the location. Because Stephanie lives in Iowa City, so we're kind of having to coordinate our schedules. And we go in, we get to see their amazing spaces, talk with them about their practice, take some photos, and then afterwards, when we're driving back, we'll sit in the car and just chat about all the interesting things that we saw and how did we feel about it. And we have like some standard questions that address things like, do you have another job?
Yeah, I got a list here.
Yeah, I mean, those sorts of things where people, like, if you want to make art and you think that you can't because you don't have a trust fund to sit back on and, like, rent space and just make things that nobody buys. No, there are a bunch of artists that, like, they have full-time jobs or part-time jobs. They make a way to make amazing art. And so we'll ask questions like that so people can kind of see the practical aspects of how to have a career, all the different ways that artists find to make their work. But then we'll tailor questions because there might be something interesting about that particular person. So like Guy Lorraine is he teaches art in Ankeny and lives in a decommissioned train depot in Newton.
Oh, that's so cool.
It is the coolest space. It is so lovely. But his work is really specifically, you know, he'll tell you a lot of things about it, but Stephanie are like, Guy makes work that like is bound to fail. He'll count all the acorns that have fallen from a tree and map it out and document each acorn, and he'll count them all so patiently, and then he'll do it twice and realize that the count is different. And you're just like, it's like a combination. It's like art and science, and the photos are beautiful.
I was just gonna say, it's art and math or art and science.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and those two things are very closely tied anyways. Mm-hmm, people don't think about it that way, but the process of art and the process of science are, they're at least cousins, if not siblings.
Yes.
So we asked him a series of questions about that. Like, after you've spent months on your summer break doing all of this very tedious, it's monumental. I just can't imagine sitting down and doing this. And I do some pretty boring long-term projects. So tell me about, like, what does it feel like when you hit that point and it doesn't match? And what do you do with that? Because those sorts of things happen all the time for him in his practice. It's fascinating.
So what do you anticipate other artists will be able to gather or glean from this? I imagine at one level some pragmatic advice and counsel around how to structure this balance of work and practice. But, you know, if you have to have a day job and blah, 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 and making it. Mm-hmm. What else?
Well, I'm hoping that it also ties communities across the state. One of the things that I've noticed, you know, like Sioux City has a beautiful art center. They have their own arts community. There's almost no crossover to Des Moines. And I know that the state, you know, it's a 3-hour drive or whatever, but at the same time, there's email. There's all of these ways.
Right.
I mean, we're not talking wagons anymore, right? So it's curious to me how much of that each of these art communities is so much in their own little silo. And what I would really like to do, for one, I want to show there's great art happening all around the state. You don't have to live in Des Moines. There's great art happening in interesting places tucked away. But also, I want those artists to like communicate with each other as well. So for Art Week, we're going to launch the website that we've been working on for the past year. And we're inviting the artists to come. So the Midwest Press guys, Aaron Wilson and Tim Dooley, they're going to come down from Cedar Falls and be in the studio.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. And they're so much fun. Molly Wood's going to come. You know, like, there's a bunch of people that we got to do these wonderful interviews with that they're going to come down and be here. And then they get to meet each other as well. And so I just feel like the opportunities that I've gotten have not, almost none of them have been because I applied for something, which, you know, I mean, you get rejected. That's art. But the things that I've gotten have been because of relationships I had with other artists and other arts professionals or collectors. So those are the sorts of things that people, if you're out in the middle of nowhere making art and you're happy not having anyone see it, then that's no problem. But if you want something else to happen, you've really got to go and meet some people and make those connections. And it should be an absolute pleasure. I mean, if you make a good connection with another artist, it's just fun.
Yeah.
Right?
So I guess what I'm hearing here is that these walls that are around Iowa get broken down when we break down the interior walls.
Mm-hmm.
And that when we have these relationships, that's when the opportunities happen. And when as those opportunities happen, we're now mm-hmm. getting filtered out from beyond our borders.
Well, and I'm hoping that by having the website, because social media works the way that it does, and I know people that are outside the state, it will point more eyes towards what's happening in Iowa as well. I just see no reason why we don't get a little more attention than what we do. From the it's an ecosystem, right? So even the Des Moines Art Center, I feel like they're doing an amazing job with the shows that they're putting on. They're not getting written up in art news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for whatever reason, and they've put on some kind of important first museum shows for a number of artists, both in the United States and internationally. So it's a frustrating problem. So you get to have like this nice supportive environment, but it's going to just kind of stay in Iowa.
So that's some of the pluses and the minuses, right?
Yeah, so far.
But with these studio visits, do you find yourself kind of involved in some level of the issue that we always talk about on this program, critique?
Oh, well, I love critique. I think that's the most important thing that you can have. I mean, when we talk about quality of art, I think it's difficult to grow as an artist if you do not have somebody else's eyes, intelligent eyes, looking at your work and telling you what works and what doesn't. And, you know, it's just, there are so many people that are working alone and don't have that opportunity. When you're in school, you have it built in. Once you go out and start your own practice, if you don't live in a place with a lot of other artists that you can just grab somebody and say, would you look at this and tell me what you think? That makes it very challenging as an artist to your professional development.
What didn't we talk about that we should have with respect to the idea of building community through the arts as we build an arts community, particularly from this vantage point of the Midwest and the advent of the cream?
Hmm. Well, I think one of the things that when I speak with other artists and we talk about the value of art, it's not a fluff thing. Art is not fluff. Every child makes art, and we're not given that gift as something that's just like an extra. It is there because this is how our brains think. This is how we create our community, our society, our machines, our technology, all of that is so important and embedded in this creative impulse. And so whether that comes across as a beautiful painting or sculpture that you can say, I just enjoy looking at it, or if it comes across something more challenging where you're like, I don't enjoy that very much, but that made a really difficult conversation possible. I think that the state needs to pay more attention to arts education. And I understand that people don't think of it as one of those necessary things. It's an extra. It is not an extra. Scientists do art. Scientists play music. Art is about coming up with a problem that does not have one solution and coming up with many solutions and failing and failing and failing and still going back in and finding that there's got to be a way to do this. And that's what all of the things that drive our economy, that's what that is. So I feel like we've kind of cut the legs out from under a whole generation of people, and we don't talk about it in the right way. So to me, that's something that's very important to me.
Many thanks to Laressa Cable for the interview and for her work as an artist and community builder. As a reminder, she and her project, The Cream, will be part of the Fitch Building's open studio event scheduled for Tuesday, June 25th of Art Week, 6 to 9 p.m. The Fitch Building's address is 304 15th Street, over by Exile Brewing. Again, all kinds of things will be happening at the West End that night, and if I have learned anything from these interviews about community building through the arts, it's a lot like parenting. Much is gained by just showing up. So let's all go. Now, a quick shout out to Adam and Teen Yoga, the studio of Jim and Ann Miller on Ingersoll, where Larissa, her collaborator Ben Easter, and I attend almost daily, as does Natalie Lowe of Light Cube Music, who will be performing at Noche June 14th, 7 to 10 p.m., and again at Noche on July 24th. She'll be an upcoming guest on this podcast. Now, I promised you a poem. This by Crystal Stone, who along with poet Steve Rose has coordinated a series of readings at Zanzibar's Coffee Adventure nearly every night of Art Week, and Crystal will be our next 900 Views guest. This is called Beginnings Hey Bun. He has four laughs, but one of them is silent. I have only three, and all of them are loud. I used one the first time we kissed. The sound was American, the way I say his name. He doesn't mind. Sometimes he even tells me it's cute. I stuck a quail egg inside my body today because loving him makes me itchy. He doesn't notice if he feels that way too. It's not his insides that burn. Lucky him. The cells in my cervix are precancerous. My chances of getting cancer are higher if I smoke. My doctor tells me even just one cigarette. I tell her don't worry, but it's hard to write poems when you're falling in love. I use an adverb every time I imagine his smile, like I need it very much, like anyone certainly cares about the details, regards the description of even small motions. Instead of kill two birds with one stone, some insist feed two birds with one scone. But I have no interest in nesting, even though it is winter. We hyphenate our lips, not our names. We see stories we already want to tell, not the sun or the trees. When we look up, the clouds are cursive letters. Love is snow, I sled in the debris. Again, Crystal will be our guest next week, and she's got a couple more poems. You're really going to want to hear them. And she appears at Zanzibar's Coffee Adventure on June 21st at 5:30 p.m. And a reminder, June 22nd is the Art Week kickoff party at Curate. Limited space, it's called, with visual artists, flash poets, DJ, rock, paper, scissors, and more. Put on your dancing shoes and go. Many thanks to all the folks at Mainframe Studios. They've got all kinds of events happening as well. Rachel and all the folks at Art Beacon and Art Week, and my collaborator, Alex Cooney. I'm Pat Bodie. See you at Art Week.